This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's a company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast. Welcome to the Bring Your Product Idea to Life podcast. This is the podcast for you if you're getting started selling products or if you'd like to create your own product to sell. I'm Vicky Weinberg, a product creation coach and Amazon expert. Every week, I share friendly, practical advice as well as inspirational stories from small businesses. Let's get started. Today I'm speaking with Lucy Heron, the founder of Slofer. Slofer is a women's shoe brand that hand-makes ballerina pumps with an all-day sneaker comfort sole. So I had a really great conversation with Lucy. We talked obviously a lot about her products, but one of the most fascinating things we spoke about, for me anyway, was about the value of your products. Lucy talks about the fact that her shoes are very, very expensive, and she is not apologetic about that, and she charges for them what they're worth. She's really transparent about her pricing, how much it costs to actually have her shoes made. They're all ethically produced. And yeah, I think this was a really, for me, it was really fascinating and quite empowering actually to hear Lucy talk so confidently about her price point, which I say is higher than a lot of the products that I speak about. And yeah, I think you're going to find this hopefully really interesting and really inspiring too. So I'd love now to introduce you to Lucy. So hi Lucy, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
So can we start with you please giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell?
Yeah, so I'm Lucy Heron and I'm the co-founder of Slofer, and my husband and I designed a ballet shoe / sneaker, and we sell online at slofer.com.
Amazing. So let's start with what inspired you to create Slofer, because I'd say a ballet shoe crossed with a sneaker is pretty unique, isn't it?
It is. And that's the reason we started it. I feel like I'm kind of being dragged out of Dragon's Den by security shouting, "We have a USP, there's no one like us." But we are literally the only ballerina pump that is a hybrid with a sneaker. So a lot of ballet pumps try and be comfortable, but they aren't. They kind of get one element right. They get the elegance right, but not the comfort. And that's why we started the company, because I have always worn ballet pumps. And I've always kind of gone down like the cheap ballet pump road, and you can kind of feel the floor through them. And I kind of knew they weren't comfy, but I liked them. So I probably suffered for years with uncomfortable shoes. And then I met my husband, and he loves trainers, got so many trainers. And we were going on a weekend break, and he was like, "Why can't you just pack properly and take a pair of trainers for walking around all day?" And at that point, I was actually pregnant. And he was like, "This is ridiculous, you're going to be really uncomfortable." And I was like, "No, I'll be fine. And obviously I was really uncomfortable. And so we got back, and he, for my birthday, he gave me this pair of shoes, and they were a ballet pump with a so-called sneaker sole. But there were so many things wrong with them. They were really ugly, and I felt really awful, but I've hated those shoes. Like, and it's funny, we just have a love about it now, because we've now got a company. But they were really ugly, and they were really uncomfortable, and they were really expensive as well. So I was like, wow, it's not just cheap shoes that hurt. It's also like the expensive ones. And so we saw a genuine gap in the market, because I couldn't find anything like it out there. And then fast forward to being pregnant the second time, I was also back in Italy, but this time wearing my Slofers, and I was super, super comfortable, because they've got a sneaker sole. So you look great and you feel comfy all day.
That's amazing. And I can definitely see the need for that, because I used to wear ballet pumps all the time. And then I got to I can't remember whether it was pregnancy or a certain age when I was just like, no, I'm going to wear trainers, because as much as I love how they look, it's just not comfy when you're on your feet for a lot of time, you know, like those cardboard thin soles.
Yeah.
They don't do you any good.
Exactly.
So I can definitely see, like, because trainers aren't always smart enough, and there are those occasions where you're like, oh, you know, I want to be comfy, but my trainers won't quite cut it. So I think this is just such an amazing idea.
Thank you.
So what happened? So you had the idea of, you know, you creating them. So talk us through a little bit, if you don't mind, about what happened then. So how you got from this idea, and it sounds like you had a really clear vision to actually having a finished product.
That's the problem. You have a really clear vision and it's really difficult trying to explain it. But also, even when you think you've explained it and you get a prototype back and you're like, oh no, that's really not what I meant. And so we went on LinkedIn. We found a footwear agent in Portugal, and we didn't do like a massive amount of research. I've got to be completely honest. We just kind of dived in, and obviously that meant that we made loads of mistakes and learned fast, but that's probably also quite a good thing in business. So we found an agent and we sent her some drawings and just said, look, this is what we want them to be like. She sent a prototype back, and at that point I was crushed. I was like, I hate it. I don't want to do this. It's horrible. I hate it. And my husband was like, get on with it. We've got to just improve it and make it better. And so we binned off that agent because she just said, it can't be done. Everything was no. And I was kind of happy to take no for an answer, because I was like, oh, I just think it's a stupid idea. And I kind of got the fear about starting a business and felt like a bit of a fraud. And my husband was like, no, let's keep going. And so, yeah, we found another factory in Spain, and we got an amazing shoe. Kind of 4 or 5 attempts later, I was holding this shoe in my hand and I was like, oh, wow, like, whoa, this is weird now, because this is exactly what we wanted. So there was a lot of going backwards and forwards. And then we found a place that could make our shoes. And then kind of the rest is history, really. We did actually move factory again to get a better price point and someone that could produce smaller quantities, because obviously we don't want to be kind of like mass produced and, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of the same pair. The good thing about Slofa is they're handmade and we do small batches and we have a massive waiting list and there's a lot of demand. And so that's kind of, we wanted to be a bit less wasteful, and we don't have like seasons, we don't have end of season sales. Our shoes are our shoes, and you get them or you don't get them. And so now it's just like a creative process. So the bulk of the shoe is done. We're always looking for ways to kind of tweak it and make it a little more, you know, a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more flexible, but we're really happy with the feel of it and the look of it. And so yeah, now it just comes down to having a bit of fun with leathers and animal prints and neons and just putting together what you see as the finished product.
That sounds amazing. And I really like what you said about the way you produce them. So they're not made to order, they're small batches. Is that right? So you're not making them as people order them. But that sounds really good. So I guess there's a lot less waste involved.
Yeah, there is. I mean, look, it's a really, really expensive business to be in. It's very expensive on the manufacturing side, because we work with factories that pay a fair wage. And so I think if you're going to spend £7 on a pair of pumps, you know that someone is being exploited somewhere. And so yes, our shoes are expensive. There's no way of getting around that, but they're handmade and they're really comfortable and they last for a really, really long time. So they are an investment piece. Obviously, in recognition of the fact that they are an investment piece, we do some really solid core colours. So for a lot of people, they're like, oh, wow, I love the neon ones. They're so bright. They're so amazing. But if you're going to spend nearly £200 on a pair of shoes, I also understand why you're like, I can't wear that every day. So you've got to wear a blush colour or a black or a navy. And so we have a lot of people who wear our shoes every day to work because they're kind of sensible, quote unquote. But then we also have people who are like, oh my God, I love glitter and sparkle and neon and animal print. And so, yeah, we sell to loads of different people. And so it's almost like you can kind of see like people's personalities coming across with the shoes that they pick, because we've got something to suit everyone. But yeah, we produce about 30 at a time. So I've got, you know, in some styles I've got 30, and then in some styles I've got, you know, next to nothing and they sell out. And I think people are kind of used to the way we work now. So as soon as we announce we've got new stock coming in, I sell out pretty much within 48 hours because people have been waiting for them for so long. So yeah, that's kind of how we work.
And does that mean that, so does every colour or style, is every colour or style available at once, or is it more like, okay, now I've got this one in stock and then in a few weeks you have another one? Is that how it works?
Yeah, so we do a full restock at the end of our season. So typically people don't really buy kind of October, November, December, January, February. And then obviously people start thinking about the spring, don't they? They're so fed up with the winter that by March, even though it's still a little bit cold, they're like, you know what, let's just start thinking about the summer. So we do a full restock so that when we start selling again, you know, and we're really busy in the spring, we've got every style, every colour. We've just introduced a wide fit in some of our shoes, and obviously that really took us by surprise. We only had 10 and I sold 8 on the first day, so I was like, oh god, I should have got some more. So we're always trying to like expand but be sensible about it. So yeah, I'm all stocked up and ready to go for the spring season now.
That's amazing. So I find that so interesting. I've never spoken to anyone who does it like that. So I guess over the winter months, is it just a case of you have what you have? So if someone went on your website in December, you have what you have in December. And then if they want something specific, they may have to wait until you restock.
We're fully stocked. So we aim to be fully stocked by the time things quieten down. So I guess our off season, you could say, is kind of from October the 1st. It's quite funny. You can see it literally go off a cliff because people are, you know, thinking about winter boots and thick socks and trainers, doing the school run and stuff like that. So actually December's a great time to buy because I've got everything. But if you come to me in May and you're like, oh, I'm looking for a really delicate blush coloured shoe for the spring, I'm like, sorry, I've probably sold out. We're very, very busy from about March.
Oh, okay, so I misunderstood. I thought you were fully stocked from March, but that makes sense. So actually if someone wants something specific, now is a really great time to go and have a look, isn't it?
yeah.
Oh, that is really interesting. And I guess the other thing with the small batches is it gives you a chance to see what sells and what doesn't.
Yeah, to be honest, like we've made a few bad choices. And yeah, you see the ones that fly off the shelves and you see the ones that don't. And I think the temptation is to be like, oh God, I better get them on sale. Some money is better than no money. You know, we can't afford to do that. Our profit margins are really slim and we're not going to do that. So we do have some colours that do much better than others. But yeah, there seems to be like it's generally most styles appeal because, you know, as I said earlier, we've got some really basic sort of wardrobe staples that will last forever and go with everything. And then we've got some really cool kind of neon animal print ones, sparkles, glitter. So there's kind of something that suits everyone. So it's always quite interesting to see what happens when my phone like does the cha-ching and I look and I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're going to go for. It's always quite interesting seeing what people buy.
Yeah, that is. And are you tempted, the ones that do sell out time after time, are you tempted to order more of those or are you sticking to the small batches for now?
Yeah, well, we still stick to small batches because we're quite a fast cash flow business. And so we have a high turnover. But obviously, as you can imagine, our manufacturing costs are high, our marketing costs are high. We're always getting, you know, hit with invoices. And it can be a bit scary in our downtime as well, because obviously we don't have the money coming in, but we've got the money going out. So we do have kind of like hero pieces, which are the shoes that just sell out the whole time. But we have to be careful not to let them cannibalize the whole of the range. And so I think what we find is that where I might produce, you know, 30 to 50 of the black and the navy, I'll only produce 30 of like the animal print with neon, because I know that I could produce 100 and I would still sell out, but then everything else would be left on the shelf. So it's just kind of, it's just trying to keep, you know, the idea that we've got what we've got and when they're gone, they're gone. And also like with leather, it can go out of stock really quickly because it's a natural product, and so no two sort of sheets of leather are going to be the same. And so you can look and say, oh, I love that leopard print, I love that Dalmatian print, and actually the supplier may just suddenly discontinue it, and then we'll get another leopard but it'll be completely different. And obviously you roll out a massive piece of leather that is like meters and meters and meters, you know, large. But then when it's actually on a shoe, particularly a little sort of a smaller size shoe, you're like, wow, is that the same? It looks really, really different. And so the shoes can always end up looking slightly different. And so, yeah, we do kind of 30 here, 30 there, and see what happens. And the frustration is I got some samples back actually the other day And I thought they were going to be amazing. And I approved the leather and I was like, this is going to be lovely, perfect for spring, not losing any time. And then it arrived and I was like, oh, it looks a little bit too dark. I didn't want it to be pink, pink. I wanted it to be neutral. But you go from, you scale down, and once it's on the shoe, it ends up looking really different. So yeah, I've got to tweak that and find a slightly lighter color leather. So I will possibly be ready for spring, but I'm kind of ready when I'm ready. That's what I've realized, that there are so many variables that you can't really stress about it. And I think the good thing is we don't have like the new season coming soon, because if I said that, I'd then have to go, sorry, we're going to be 3 weeks late. So we're very kind of relaxed about things. They happen when they happen.
That's really good. That's a really good attitude to have, I think. But do you struggle to, or how, to communicate this to customers? Because for customers, this is a different way of shopping, isn't it? That there are small batches, when you have what you have, when it's gone, it's gone. How do you get that message across to your customers?
I'm just really honest. I tell them, like I've just told you, you know, we have like a waiting list function. So someone will say, can you email me when this is back in stock? And I'll email them and say, sorry, it's not coming back until the end of next year. And they're like, oh, wow, okay. So then typically they'll buy something else. And then when I email them, they're in such a rush, because a lot of our shoes do stick in your head because they're quite vibrant. And so I sit back. It's quite funny. I love it when I've got a restock of like my really bright ones, and I'll sit back. And I think the record, I sent out an email to everyone and said, they're here. And my phone pinged 3 minutes later. And when we did a restock of the Dalmatian with the neon, I sold a pair every 3 minutes for an hour. And I was screaming excited. It was so funny. It was just like cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. And then I'd sold them all. So I was like, oh God, maybe I should have got some more. But then obviously that goes back to what I was saying, that, you know, we're never going to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds for all of the reasons that I've given.
I think that's nice though, in a way, because it also kind of makes it not, I don't want to use the word exclusive, that's not the right word, but it's kind of nice that it's something that it's something like a special purchase, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. And I'm never going to be flipping it and say, oh no, it's an everyday thing. It's not an everyday thing. They're nearly £200. This is something that you have to think about. They're well made. They're made by people who are paid properly. And they're made to last. Like, they're really, really, really good quality. And it's funny, because I think my sort of reluctance was, I guess, coming at this, I was always quite cautious about how I price stuff, because I was like, no, you can't ask people to spend that much money. But then we did loads of research and we were like, there are companies out there that are charging £500 for a pair of pumps. And I can tell you now, they are not as well made, and you can still feel the floor through them. So yeah, it has taken a little while. I'm not, by my nature, I don't have pound signs ringing. And so my temptation was to try and price them lower, but we couldn't make a profit. We couldn't keep up. We couldn't produce any more if I set the price too low. And so I think it's just this constant argument. It's like, are they expensive or are they overpriced? And what I can say is they're not overpriced, because I offer a breakdown. I've done it when people have kind of been a little bit picky, you know, like kind of keyboard warriors, and they see our ads and they're like, blah, 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 I can get these for £3 in Primark. And it's like, okay, go on then. Because, you know, I can't put my energy into like changing hearts and minds. Like, if you want to shop in Primark, that's fine. I'm not going to be preachy about it. But here's my breakdown. Here's what the leather costs. Here's what the manufacturing costs. And then the choice is yours, really. But we're really upfront about everything, about costs, about the fact that we don't produce a lot, about the fact that you might love these shoes, but no, sorry, I'm not going to get them for 9 months. Yeah, that's kind of how we approach it.
I really like that, because I think there's such a temptation to either underprice your products because you're scared of charging too much, or almost be apologetic about it. Like, I'm really sorry that, you know, that I'm charging you this. But I really love the fact that you can stand behind your pricing, and yet, because you know your numbers and you're really transparent about it. I really love that, because it's really scary asking someone to pay you for anything, isn't it? And I think whether you sell a product or a service, there's always a temptation to go that a little bit cheaper just to make the other person feel a bit better. But I really hope people find that inspiring, what you've just said, Lucy, because you know what your products are worth. And it doesn't sound like you second guessed yourself at all. You've kind of gone, okay, this is what I spend. And obviously you're a business, you have to make a profit. I really like that.
Thank you. I mean, it comes from years of underpricing, like prior to slavery, it comes of like almost years of underpricing myself, because I've run my own sort of my own thing. It's a not-for-profit, and I remember, you know, going and giving talks in Manchester because it would be great exposure. And I remember spending like £100 on a train ticket and standing there and talking to seven people for an hour, and that's like my whole day gone, my money gone, and I'm like, I got nothing from it. And actually my husband kept saying, you've got to say no more. And I was like, I can't. And so I've suggested everything for years. And it's so nice just going, no, doesn't suit me. No, not doing it. And I think that's the headspace you've got to get yourself into for pricing stuff. Because at one stage I was running one charity, which is like my not-for-profit that I've been doing 15 years, and getting paid in exposure, which I kind of like learned my lesson eventually. But at one stage we were running like a not-for-profit for people who like nice shoes. And we were like, this is insane. And what we found is that when we increased the prices massively, but it wasn't that we increased it massively for no reason. We put the prices up to where they should be. We didn't lose any customers. We just got different customers. It's not about underpricing stuff, because someone will always buy your shoes. You've just got to find the right people. And so there's been a lot of kind of work to get my own head around this behind the scenes. So I sound like I'm totally okay about it, but this has been like a long time in the making. And it's just realizing that, you know, people out there will spend thousands of pounds on the most ridiculous of things. So if you're charging nearly £200 for a pair of handmade shoes, yeah, they're not for people that want £10 fast fashion, but they're also, I've had loads of people going, oh, they're quite affordable, and I'm like, yes, okay. And yeah, so there are so many people out there. You just got to find the right people for your price point.
I think you're right, and I think a lot of us do get there eventually. It's just a shame we spend all those years or months or whatever it is not making money in the price, because I've definitely done it. I've definitely, with services I've offered, underpriced because I've just been a little bit scared of asking for more money. And I think it's just like knowing the value of yourself, and for you, knowing the value of your product. And I think as well, people who are looking for ethically made products are happy to pay a bit more. And I guess that's probably at least some of your customer base is people who want to shop ethically, because, and they know that shopping ethically means people are being treated well, paid well. You're therefore going to pay more for that product.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I've definitely bought into the whole, oh, I need a new top, and I'll just buy one from somewhere horrific and I won't name them, you know, in my 20s and I guess early 30s. And I literally read one book and it completely changed sort of my attitude. It was Consumed by Aja Barber. And I kind of thought, oh my God, I sort of suddenly realized that at the age of 40, which is like embarrassingly late, I just kind of realized, like, you only ever see the face of it. You just go into a shop and buy what you want and you don't realize what's going on sort of behind the scenes. And I know what you mean, because now I'm like, oh, I could do with a couple of white t-shirts. And you're like, oh, they're really great, but they're £5 from, you know, X, Y, Z. And you think, oh, okay. Oh, right. Now I get why it's £5. And I know that sounds like, oh, how can you be so stupid? How can you be so naive? But I honestly think people just, you're busy. You don't really think about everything. But once your eyes have been open to it, then I think it does change. So I can honestly say, I really consciously I've avoided a whole load of shops. And I now question, like, do I really, really, really need this? And even if I'm like, oh, I don't need it, but I want it, I still pick my want, quote unquote, from a better place. So yeah, I know that sounds a bit, I know, like, if I'd heard someone say that to you two, 3 years ago, I'd be like, oh, hark at you. But, you know, it's just that wisdom, I guess, from, you know, and Instagram's great because you have access to so many people in the fashion world that can help you make the right sort of decisions. And obviously that's something that we've tried to kind of like implement in our business now.
That's great, thank you. And I think you're right, I'm exactly the same, especially in terms of, do I actually need this, or am I just being brought into the whole consumerism thing of we need more stuff? And I do think things are going in that direction, but I think, like you, I was probably late 30s, 40 before I kind of got there, and it's a shame. You know, it took so long, but I think things are definitely going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm really conscious of time, but there's one more thing I'd really like to touch on, if that's okay, Lucy, which is investment and seeking investment, and particularly seeking investment as a female business owner. I did an episode quite a while ago now all about seeking investment, and I know that for women it can be more challenging than it is for men. We obviously haven't got loads of time to talk about this, but I'd love to just know a little bit about your experience, if that's okay.
My experience has been awful. I've sat at my kitchen table with absolute snake oil merchants, and I'm sorry to say it, but it's just, there is a certain type of male investor, and before anyone like beats me around the head with it, yes, I know, not all men, not all investors, but you know, there's a certain type, and I've had my business plan ripped up in front of me. I've had them draw lines through it. I've had them tell me that I shouldn't be online and that I should open a shop on Bond Street, which I just had to shut off and glaze over and just smile and nod and just wait for him to finish and kind of get out of my house. I've had people telling me that my products are mediocre and that my business plan is weak, all with the intention of undervaluing my company so that they can buy 90% of it for 10 grand and make me feel like I'm still involved and pull the rug from underneath me. So I've had two really bad experiences with would-be male investors, and I made a vow never ever to work with male investors again unless we can have a conversation where I can get to the end of my sentence before they start banging on the table and telling me I'm wrong. And I'm more than happy with everything I've set up. I'm more than happy to defer to people who know more than me. But I find that in this business, when you're looking for investment, you attract a certain type. They don't want to give you any credit. They don't want to value you because they want a bargain and they want to take over. And I've kind of had enough of being bulldozed over. So actually, we are in communication with, having said everything I've said, a male investor. But my bad experiences have made me really, really forthright. And I'm like, I have a business plan. I will be presenting it. I will take questions at the end. And I'm so not like that. I'm so not like that. But I've got really good at shutting down all of the objections that people have, because I know it's a game. I know it's a game. And I know they're trying to get my company for next to nothing. And that's not happening because we've put our savings into it. We've put so much of ourselves into it. I'm damned if I'm going to get into bed with the wrong person. I'd rather have no company at all. So yeah, I definitely think women are the way forward, because I think we are just naturally less aggressive. And that's not to say that we're not assertive. That's not to say that we're not good at what we do. I just feel like there's a slightly better approach when you speak to women. And yes, there are some great men out there and there are some awful women out there. And that's not the purpose of the conversation. But I generally find you feel like you're working with a colleague, with a team member when you speak to a female investor, and they want to get to know you, they want to get to know the business. Whereas with the men that I've spoken to, I've just been left with a really sort of bad impression. But with all bad experiences, it's taught me a lot. And so I'm going into every conversation I have now with my eyes wide open. And I think you've just got to kind of not be afraid of saying no. So yeah, you know, if we can't get investment on good terms, then we will bin it off and we will go for attempt number four. But I think you just can't be bulldozed. And I think, you know, stereotypes are kind of there for a reason. So I'm always quite mindful if a male investor comes to me now, because I have found from my experience that, you know, there's a fairly aggressive approach and that isn't for me. So yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I'll be keeping my fingers crossed for you. I'm sorry you've had such bad experiences. I hope you didn't mind sharing that. I just think it's good not to put anybody off, because I think what's really reassuring is you're saying that despite having had some bad experiences, you're still looking for investment. Yeah. And it sounds like you just, you know, you're really clear that it needs to be a certain way on your terms. And I do think that's good for people to hear, because I think investment's scary as it is. But it's just, I think what I hope people take from this is what you said about just knowing your worth and standing your ground and not going for the first thing that someone offers you just because you're flattered that, you know, they've asked. Yeah, and that's a theme I've got from this whole thing speaking to you, Lucy, is you really seem to know your worth, your product's worth. And I think that's really inspiring, actually.
Thank you. No, it's been really good to chat about it. And yeah, I'm always happy to kind of share information and be a sounding board. Like, we've got so much stuff wrong, that I almost think it's a waste not to share it. So if I can make my balls ups and share them, then, you know, hopefully other people will learn from that. I'm definitely better to learn from in as much as all the stuff I've got wrong. I'm still working on getting everything right. But yeah, I think we need to kind of support each other and look out for each other and not be so, you know, guarded with all our information. There's stuff that you need to keep close to your chest, but I think it's so much better to just kind of be collaborative and helpful. So yeah, that's kind of my offer going forward. If anyone needs to talk about it, I'm just a phone call away.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah, and I think you will get taken up on that, I'm sure. So I'm looking at time. One more minute. I've got one final question. And actually, based on what you've just said, I think this ties in beautifully, is what is the number one piece of advice you'd like to give to other people listening today? What's the one thing you want?
Always try and do everything yourself first. Don't put yourself in the bin and pay someone to do something. Try your social media. Try your content, try your photography, try designing stuff, because we've spent so much money on other people doing stuff that I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I so could have done that myself. Try everything yourself before you pay someone else to do it.
That makes sense. Thank you. I also think it makes sense because once you are looking for someone else to do it, you kind of know what you want. So I've got a good example for me would be this podcast. I'm trying to outsource the editing, but because I've done it myself for 3 years, I know how it should be. I know how long it should take. All of those little things that actually, when if you just outsource from the start, and I'm a big fan of outsourcing, by the way, but yeah, I think the big problem is you just don't know how things should be, could be, what you should be paying, how long a job should take. So I think having all of that data yourself is so useful.
Exactly.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much, Lucy. So I'm going to link to your website in the show notes so people can go and take a look at the shoes.
Thank you. I really hope everyone likes our shoes. And if you've got any questions about what we've got in stock or sizing questions, just, yeah, ping me an email.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's really good to speak to you.
Thank you so much for listening right to the end of this episode. Do remember that you can get the full back catalogue and lots of free resources on my website, vickyweinberg.com. Please do remember to rate and review this episode if you've enjoyed it, and also share it with a friend who you think might find it useful. Thank you again and see you next week. Hi, this is just a little note. Say if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.